WML News at 7. Good morning, everyone. I'm John Matthews. The death toll is up to 12 now in yesterday's mass shooting at a municipal building in Virginia Beach.
A Virginia government source tells CNN it was a disgruntled employee, 40-year-old Dwayne Craddock, who worked as a certified professional engineer for the city of Virginia Beach. They say he walked into the municipal building with a .45 caliber handgun and opened fire, leaving behind a trail of carnage.
Correspondent Brian Todd, police say an officer was among the wounded but was saved by his protective vest. The gunman fired indiscriminately with a .45 caliber semi-automatic handgun on several floors of the building. Aside from the dead, at least a half dozen others were wounded. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
We must take care of these families. These horrific tragedies test our souls. Grief doesn't pass quickly. It lasts far beyond these coming days, and these families will need support in the months and years to come.
Route 50 heading for the beach was closed in Davidsonville, Maryland for most of the overnight hours after a man called for help saying a pedestrian had been struck on the highway.
A little bit after 10 this evening, we got a call for a crash that possibly involved a pedestrian on Route 50 right before the 424 exit. Fire Department and Roman County Fire Department actually got out first. When they got out, they were confronted with a man with a knife.
Jacqueline Davis with Anne Arundel County Police says officers were called in. They ordered the man to drop the knife. When he refused, an officer fired a shot and took the man down. He's being treated at an area hospital. Police say there was no apparent accident. You better visit those cherry trees while the tidal basin's still above water. The National Trust for Historic Preservation has placed the tidal basin on its list of the most endangered historic places. Both that group and the National Park Service say climate change and an increasing number of visitors are damaging the site, which is now becoming partially submerged daily at high tide, and foot traffic is damaging the iconic Yoshino cherry trees that line the area. The University of Maryland Medical System has rolled out a conflict of interest policy which tightly restricts board members from obtaining contracts with the system. The change has come in the wake of the book scandal that ultimately cost board member Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh her job. Other members had contract deals worth millions of dollars with the system. The new policy requires board members with potential conflicts of interest to present them to a board committee which will approve or deny any new deals.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Just what you need. At the start of summer, scientists detected a great white shark off the coast of Ocean City on Friday. Researchers heard a ping from an electronic tag placed on the shark back in February so they could track its movements. They say the shark named Brunswick was well offshore, and they believe he was moving north for the summer and fall. Brunswick is nearly 9 feet long. He weighs more than 430 pounds, but scientists still say he's growing. In sports, the Nationals get blown out early. They give up 8 runs in the first 3 innings, then fall to the Mets 9-3. The Orioles fare better against the Giants. They win 9-6 at Camden Yards. The Nats and O's both play at 4 this afternoon. Up next, traffic and weather on WMAL.
So we have things happening.
The question is where?
China.
It's happening.
North Korea.
It's happening.
The border.
Happening right now.
In Venezuela.
This is crazy what's happening.
Russia.
Are you kidding me?
That's happening as we speak.
The Mueller report.
Case closed.
It's happening.
Today.
It's moving.
Tomorrow.
Every.
To get the facts.
Single.
Pass along the information.
Day.
What happens next happens here. 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Non-attorney spokesperson and sponsored by OpenJar Concepts. Attention veterans and active duty military. If you were issued earplugs between 2002 and 2016 and were diagnosed with hearing loss or ringing in the ears, you may be entitled to compensation. The manufacturer of these military earplugs recently paid $9.1 million to resolve claims that their earplugs were defective, potentially exposing service members to damaging sound levels that could have resulted in hearing loss or tinnitus. If you or a loved one were issued earplugs and were diagnosed with tinnitus or hearing loss, don't wait. You fought for this country, and our attorneys want to fight for you. Call 800-719-6029 now for a free legal consultation and to see if you may be eligible to file a claim. Time restrictions may apply, and you pay nothing unless there's a recovery in your favor. So call 800-719-6029 now. Again, 800-719-6029. That's 800-719-6029.
7:05 at 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL. Traffic and weather. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Maryland, southbound 95 at 212, we still have the accident activity. However, traffic is now squeezing by on the right shoulder. But do expect delays, and you may want to consider the Baltimore-Washington Parkway or 29 as your alternates. On the Beltway Interloop, couple of reported accidents, one on the Interloop at River Road, one on the Interloop at Georgia Avenue. But so far, we're not seeing any delays through that area. Be aware of the work zone on northbound 395 between Seminary Road and King Street along the center of the roadway, and southbound 395 at Glebe Road, there's also construction. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Weather Channel forecast.
Well, mostly sunny skies today. We could have a stray shower or thunderstorm possible this afternoon and a high of 87. Partly cloudy tonight with a low of 67. For tomorrow, scattered afternoon showers and thunderstorms with a high of 85. Monday, sunny but cooler and a high 72. Tuesday, mostly sunny, high 76. 70 right now at Reagan National. I'm John Matthews on 105.9 FM and AM 630. Washington's Mall, WMAL.
John Gibson here. The co-chairman of J.P. Morgan warned that a deep correction, like 40%, could hit the stock market at any time. Don't lose 40%. Diversify. My friends at Noble Gold Investments can help. Add gold or silver to your IRA or 401k rollover accounts.
The stock market has been dipping the last few weeks with all the China trade negotiations. Don't risk your investment. Listen to John Gibson and protect your portfolio with solid investments like gold and silver. Don't miss out. Get the free investment guide now. Dial pound 250 now and say Noble Gold 10. Just dial pound 250 on your cell phone and say the word Noble Gold 10 to be connected now and get the free investment guide. Or go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Individual results may vary. Invest wisely. Get the free investment guide now. Dial pound 250 on your phone now and say Noble Gold 10. Take John's advice and protect your portfolio. Dial pound 250 on your phone now and say Noble Gold 10.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9 FM and AM 630.
Thank you for being with us on the Saturday morning update. And John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The special counsel making a statement to the press, not taking any questions. Now, you've seen special counsel investigations in the past. What struck you about what you heard from Robert Mueller that might be a little out of the ordinary?
What struck me was that it's very clear that Robert Mueller feels he has done his job. If Congress wants to take his reports, parts one and two, and do something with it, then they have every right to do that. On the other hand, will he cooperate? No. He believes res ipsa loquitur, the thing speaks for itself. And he made this very clear in his statement. The fact that he would not even take questions from reporters who swarmed the Department of Justice building speaks volumes about Mr. Mueller. Sure, Congress could subpoena him to come testify before a hearing. He's probably going to avoid the subpoena, and he does not want to have other questions about what he's repeated over and over. Now, I want to settle a mystery once and for all. Dear hearts and gentle people, it is true, as Robert Mueller said, that he did not say the president was fully exonerated from any crimes. There might have been law-breaking. Well, this is what he meant by that. Go to your Mueller report, turn to part two, and read page 9. What it says is that the president may have violated, and I quote, potentially relevant statutes in an unordinary case, end of quote. That's the most detail you'll get out of any possible law-breaking by the President of the United States. I'm sure that if the statute of limitations is not run out when Donald Trump is a former president, that other people will look at just what Mr. Mueller meant. And they may try to write some books about what this president did that may have violated the law. For now, Mueller said all he's got to say, and he's not going to be talking much more.
Well, Justin Amash, the first Republican to come out in favor of impeachment, you got the last word in with Sarah Sanders, and you got her read on Justin Amash right after that Mueller press statement.
There were so many questions to Sarah Sanders about Robert Mueller's swan song that I thought I could get in a little tweet, a little piping up, and I did. I asked whether the president had an opinion on Congressman Justin Amash, that his interpretation that Robert Mueller was saying, quote, back to you, Congress, end of quote. Sarah, as she usually does, got right to the point with me and said, it's not worth the time of day, whatever Congressman Amash said. And then I asked a follow-up question. He faces a primary from State Representative Jim Lower, a critical supporter of the president, and someone getting money for just being the anti-Amash. Would the president support him? And she simply replied, you better ask the president yourself, which I intend to do. That certainly was not a ringing endorsement of an incumbent who holds a very safe district. Let's put it that way.
Give us a little history on Justin Amash.
Justin Amash, when he came to Congress in 2010, saw himself as the lineal heir to his political hero, Ron Paul. And then he discovered Ron Paul has a son named Rand, who's in the U.S. Senate. And, of course, he has not been able to get a highly visible profile for his views, which are clearly in the mold of Ron Paul, Ayn Rand, and the libertarian mainstream. For one thing, he has voted against measures that would restrict gay adoption or same-sex adoption of children. His comments and his positions on Israel are distant from most of the conservative Republicans in his area, including Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos, who broke with her congressman several years ago. She and her family may well back State Representative Lauer, a primary challenger. Now, here's something to note. This is the district Jerry Ford had for decades before resigning in 1973 to become Vice President of the United States. It is a district that is solidly Republican, but it usually elects more moderate kinds of Republican, former Congressman Paul Henry and Vern Ehlers, who retired from the seat 9 years ago, paving the way for Mr. Amash. By breaking with Donald Trump, he probably helps himself. But at the same time, he has other problems. His libertarian leanings don't sit well with others in the district. He's had some stiff primary challenges as recently as 4 years ago, and my guess is he's going to have a strong primary challenge now. And we haven't heard the last about whether President Trump will actually back Justin Amash's primary foe.
A political statement from Rocket Man on Wednesday night, but it was the original Rocket Man, Elton John. He was performing a concert in Verona, Italy, and he told his fans, quote, I am sick to death of Brexit. I am a European. I am not a stupid colonial imperialist English idiot. I am ashamed of my country. That's an interesting backdrop for the state visit from the president in the coming week.
It certainly is, and Sir Elton John, who, by the way, spends a good part of his time in Atlanta, Georgia, and frequents the Buckhead Diner, still does have apparently a soft spot for the old sod in England, and he often comments on it. He's entitled to. Look, the fact is that Brexit has passed, and it has brought down one prime minister. And my guess is that when the president goes there, he will see his friends Boris Johnson, the leading candidate to succeed Theresa May and chairman of the Brexit campaign, and Mr. Brexit himself, Nigel Farage, who frequently talks to the president by phone and visits him when he's in Washington, it will not be a normal state visit. The president will not address Parliament. The speaker, a sworn enemy of the president, has seen to that. But it will be interesting to watch. Postscript to this. The president will have a state dinner with Prime Minister Theresa May and the Queen. 2 days later, Theresa May moves out of number 10 Downing Street.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure to be here, and today I'm going to stay cool. And one more thing. The Prime Minister of Mexico, I wish him great success in what he does, and a hope that President López Obrador is no Kim Jong-un when it comes to his employees.
Yeah, that, of course, in reference to the execution of the North Korean negotiator, or at least reportedly, and again, there's some suspect about that validity of that report out of South Korea, but our reports that at least one of the negotiators that was at the Hanoi summit for the North Koreans was executed after his performance at the summit, others sentenced to hard labor. Oof. 7:16 Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. We'll talk with Cheryl Atkinson next. Then we've got Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland on the way. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Maryland on 95 southbound at 212, one right lane now getting by that accident scene earlier. The roadway had been closed. You will find some delays from 198. You may want to consider the Baltimore-Washington Parkway. 29 is your alternate. So far, not seeing any delays on those roads. In the district, keep in mind there is a 5K run going on today causing some street closures, including Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest will be closed between 14th Street and 9th Street until at least 10 o'clock this morning. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Weather Channel forecast.
And we are looking today for moderate temperatures. We'll be in the mid-80s this afternoon. And tomorrow, pretty much the same thing. We'll be up around 85 on Sunday with a chance of afternoon thunderstorms. Monday, look for sunshine, high of 71. Tuesday, mostly sunny, high 76. And Wednesday, highs of 84. Outside in Washington now, we're at 68. We're headed to 87, and it's 7:17 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Thank you for joining us. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, and it's always great to have Cheryl Atkinson join us. She hosts Full Measure. It's tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock on ABC7. Of course, she has authored The Smear and Stonewalled. Cheryl, good morning. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
We all watched the Mueller press conference this week. Everybody had sort of their own takeaway from it, and I wondered what struck you in what the special counsel had to say in that press conference this week about the Russia investigation.
Well, you know, to me it was rather uneventful. Most of it fell in the category of fair enough. He wanted to, you know, make a speech as he resigned and give sort of a little bit of an overview and say, I'm not going to talk about it again. But, of course, it's what everybody wants to make of it when reading between the lines, and each side has their point. I guess the one thing that struck me was when he said something about if they had confidence that Donald Trump wasn't guilty of something, they would have said so. You know, that was sort of an odd statement for a couple of different reasons to me. You know, I think that was the one thing that stood out.
He didn't take any questions. Had he taken questions and you were there, what questions would you have asked him?
Well, on that point, when he says if they had confidence that Trump wasn't guilty of something, they would have said so, it implies they looked for evidence. And, of course, that's not what a special counsel or prosecutor does. So my question might have been, what exculpatory information did you seek? What witnesses on behalf of Donald Trump did you listen to? What evidence did you look for or was presented to you on behalf of Donald Trump? And the answer, I think, is pretty clear that there's none. That's not, again, his job. So it makes it a little strange that he made the statement. If we had felt confident, you know, that he wasn't guilty of something, we'd have said so. They certainly didn't look at that angle. That's not what prosecutors do. I would like to ask him questions about potential conflicts of interest. You know, of course, if you look at the notion that he was potentially running an investigation that I'll say allegedly protected some players and actors and practices that took place when he was FBI director. So I think there's potential overlap there. How did he reconcile that? And thirdly, when those two agents, Strzok and Page, one's a lawyer, one's an FBI agent, were taken off of his team because of the conflicts that not he found, but the inspector general found, what did he do to take steps to erase their fingerprints off of the investigation, anything that they had done to make sure that it wasn't tainted? And did he likewise, you know, is it even possible to segregate the work they did and the possible biases they introduced? Can that same investigation fairly go forward after this is discovered? And I've really never heard anybody discuss that. And under normal circumstances, if a prosecutorial type investigation were so tainted by investigators on the team, I would think there'd be an argument in court made by the other side that, that something should be done, that the entire investigation might be tainted.
Well, with the time that they took and the number of people on the staff to investigate, I am surprised that they didn't take a little closer look at the investigation itself and the origins of the investigation, because it does play into it.
Well, the most, if you had to say, is there anything that makes you suspicious, I would say the way he directed the investigation so that it did not veer into what would be obvious, I think, to most neutral investigators, which is, if there was no collusion, as early on he seemed to conclude that they couldn't find evidence of, then why did the FBI go down this road? Why did the Department of Justice and FBI sign off on this political opposition research material, apparently contrary to these strict Woods procedures that require all information, every fact to be verified? That was passed while Mueller was FBI director. Why didn't he start wondering about that? Why didn't he wonder, if he didn't, about foreign influence from Ukraine, from the United Kingdom in the form of a former British spy that was taking place and collecting opposition research? I mean, there are so many other questions once you decide, as he seemed to do, that there wasn't evidence of collusion between Trump and Russia, then it seems to me a whole different set of questions should have been asked that he didn't seem curious about.
A number of the pundits have mentioned this, and it surprised me that I always thought that the justice system said you are innocent until proven guilty. But he seemed to throw that notion out the window. I just was stunned.
Well, and I don't think the report read that way. So that's, again, something that was unusual about the statement. He apparently wanted to shade it to some degree for reasons, who knows why. But yes, he was definitely attempting, it seems to me, to cast some doubt and maybe shade the report a little differently than it was shaded in writing. And who knows why he did that.
I want to turn to Full Measure. You have a couple of very interesting stories. The whole notion of deep fakes, and I don't think deep fakes is a household word at this point, and I was just curious where that could lead and how important it is for people to understand this.
Well, this is one of my favorite stories of the year so far. People are going to love these examples. A deep fake, in simple terms as I understand it, is technology that was introduced by an anonymous web user in 2017, and it has really gone forward by leaps and bounds since then. But think of it as face swapping technology that allows you to, let's say online, I could take someone else's face and have them say something, but make it look like in a face swap you're saying or doing the thing that they did, even though you never did. And it's kind of a fun exercise. You'll see in our story, sort of this little subculture started putting Nicolas Cage's face on everybody. Tom Cruise, you know, female actresses, and there's just really funny juxtapositions, but they look kind of real. It's very strange and very weird. But it's almost seamless. It's grown to be in the last 2 years where you really can't tell these are fake videos unless you know. And these are different than, you know, you see those videos every day online that you kind of know and that you can see are fake. This is different technology using artificial intelligence and logarithms, but it's in the hands of really anybody who wants to learn to use it because it's been put on the internet. So fast forward to the notion that it's a lot of fun to play with, but there are national security concerns, because you can imagine what would happen if the CEO of a big company were made to look like he made an announcement that he didn't, or if a world leader or the president were made to look like they said something before anybody knew it was a deep fake. It could really have big repercussions. So We're looking at all that, and we're talking to a guy calling a deep fake sleuth. He's an expert, and the government has actually hired him to try to help detect deep fakes and stay ahead of the technology. It's a lot of fun. You're going to really be fascinated by these examples we have.
And it really is scary with the amount of fake news that we saw back in the 2016 campaign. Just imagine layering in the visuals, you know, the deep fakes in with the fake news. Oh.
Even though people know not to believe everything they see on the internet, they're still largely convinced by stuff they see with their own eyes. And even if you look toward a time when we say, okay, don't trust anything you see with your own eyes at first blush on the web, that's got its own problem. You know, the fact that you maybe can't trust anything. And someone pointed out, you know, maybe a politician will be caught doing something and he'll lie and say it's a deep fake. And by the time you know it wasn't, you know, he's gotten through his crisis. So there's all different ways these deep fakes or the idea of these deep fakes can be used.
We've seen a lot of stories about homelessness and drug use in San Francisco, and with the political situation there, that's not too surprising to me, but you're doing a story on a city that did surprise me.
I've been to Seattle and didn't know ahead of time they had this homeless crisis, and I saw it. I was shocked, but apparently it's been going on for some time, and it's reached really a fever level in that city. Well, our affiliate, our station Como there, did an hour-long documentary that's just stunning in terms of looking at the opiate and drug use behind really a subculture of this homeless epidemic they're suffering and how they don't know what to do about it. And whatever political persuasion you are, because everything's looked at under that lens today, it seems like, everybody seems to be concerned in Seattle. This is not just a one-sided party thing. Everybody's fed up. Everybody's worried about it. So we're having the reporter who did that documentary on to talk to us and show us a clip and talk about why Seattle's having such a hard time grappling with this problem, but other cities too. Other cities you haven't heard of, like Florida cities on the East Coast, they're all reporting upticks in this homeless problem, and a lot of it tied to drug use and opiate addiction.
It's tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, full measure. Cheryl, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Will do. 727 Saturday morning update, WMAL. Coming up, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland.
Thinking about life insurance? What if you could make one free phone call and learn your best price from nearly a dozen highly rated price competitive companies? Well, that's exactly what happens when you call SelectQuote Life. For example, George is 40. He was getting sky-high quotes from other companies because he takes meds to control his blood pressure. But when I shopped around, I found him a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $25 a month. I'm SelectQuote agent Dan Savino. And believe me, if SelectQuote isn't shopping for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-890-6688. That's 800-890-6688. 800-890-6688. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Mike Cappell here, serial entrepreneur. Patriot Software provides American businesses with easy, cloud-based, premium accounting software and full-service payroll for up to 100 employees. Business owners love the simplicity, the price, and our U.S.-based support. And accountants love the powerful capabilities. Check out our nearly perfect 5 out of 5 star ratings.
Keep your time and money.
Diana got some really bad news from the IRS.
They said you owe quite a bit of money.
She didn't have that kind of money.
I was in a state of despair.
And when she called, all she got were threats.
Garnishing my wages, taking my house, taking my car. I didn't know if I was going to make it.
Thankfully, Diana found out about Optima Tax Relief, the leading tax resolution firm. A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, they've resolved over $500 million for their clients. Optima went right to work for Diana.
Optima Tax negotiated everything. I did not have to worry. They talked to the IRS.
Needless to say, she was relieved.
Optima Tax saved my life.
Do what Deanna did. Call Optima now for a free consultation. Call 800-908-1755. That's 800-908-1755. 800-908-1755.
Optima Tax Relief.
Testimonial from an actual client. Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, WMAL Washington.
105.9 FM and AM 630. WMAL Washington. A Cumulus station. Where Washington comes to talk. News. Now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, everyone. I'm John Matthews. Officials in Virginia Beach are still trying to come to grips with the mass murder at a municipal building that killed 12 people and wounded at least four others late yesterday afternoon. The gunman, a disgruntled longtime Virginia Beach Public Works employee armed with a semi-automatic handgun. The massacre was unsettling to an entire city. This woman was the shooter's downstairs neighbor.
I'm petrified because I live right under him, so that could have been easily me or my girlfriend or my roommate. And he seemed like a nice guy. He introduced himself when we first moved in. That's just crazy.
Police are expected to have a news conference with more details in the next hour. Eastbound Maryland Route 50 was closed most of the night in Davidsonville after police shot a man there who had apparently called 911 to report a pedestrian accident. This was shortly after 10 o'clock. When firefighters arrived, they found only a man with a knife. Police were called in, and an officer shot the man when he refused to surrender. He's being treated at a local hospital. The officer, a 20-year veteran, was not hurt. President Trump's moving forward with plans to impose growing tariffs as a means to apply pressure on Mexico to crack down on immigrants trying to reach the U.S. border. And that'll cost us all more money if it happens.
More than a third of all vegetables bought in the U.S., wine, beer, and snack foods too. More than a third of all televisions. Nearly half of all air conditioners, machinery, medical tools. Americans buy so much from Mexico. Economists are warning a new tariff on Mexican goods could hit very hard.
Correspondent Tom Foreman. In sports, the competitive portion of the Nationals' night ended early. They fell behind 8-1 and fell hard to the Reds 9-3. The Orioles fare better against the Giants. They win 9-6 at Camden Yards. Both teams play at around 4 this afternoon. WMAL traffic and weather next.
Keystone Light Motor Stones.
A rolling stone gathers no moss, but it will foam up. So 3-tap that stone. Always shoot for the stones, and you'll land in the beer aisle.
Stone knowledge.
Remember to stop and smell the stones with your mouth.
Yes, sirree.
So do your mouth a favor. Pick up a 15-pack of Keystone Light. Always smooth.
Keystone Light. Motor Stones.
Celebrate responsibly. 2019 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
I love being in a business that transforms people's lives. Hi, I'm Jonathan Cotton with the Good Feet Store. And you know what one of my favorite jobs as an owner is? Reading reviews of customers sharing their Good Feet stories. Here is a favorite review we received recently from Kindle. My feet have been hurting for 15 years. After 1.5 extremely pleasant hours at the Good Feet store, I walked out able to feel some optimism for the future. I can't wait to start doing all the things I've been avoiding. Hiking, amusement parks, walking during my lunch breaks, etc. Excited. Huge thanks to the Good Feet store. Isn't it time to get your Good Feet story? Come in for your free fitting and test walk, or invite a friend to come into the Good Feet store in Richmond, Newport News, Rockville, Maryland, and now open in Fairfax. It just might change your life. It did mine. The Good Feet store.
7:33 at WMAL. Traffic and weather. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Maryland and Calverton on southbound 95, right at 212, we still have that accident activity along the left and center of the roadway. Only the right lane getting by this accident scene. So do watch for slow traffic from 198, and you may want to consider the BW Parkway or Route 29 as your alternate routes. Traveling northbound 395 between Seminary Road and King Street, we still have that road work in the two center lanes. Watch for slowdowns there. And keep in mind that in Arlington, there is a race going on. So north and southbound 110 will be closed between 66 and 395. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Weather Channel forecast.
Mostly sunny skies today. We'll have a stray shower or thunderstorm possible and a high of 87. Partly cloudy tonight with a low 67. Scattered afternoon showers and thunderstorms tomorrow and a high of 85. 69 right now at Reagan National. I'm John Matthews, 105.9 FM and AM 630, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:34 Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Great to have you with us, and we are joined at this time every week by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good to have you with us, sir.
Hey, always great to be on with you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
All right. Article, you know, it's interesting when you're trying to find articles on the investigation of the investigators. It's hard to find those articles online because the, you know, mainstream publications just do not carry the articles. But I've got a little background here from the Washington Examiner. Representative Doug Collins, ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, wrote letters to the Attorney General and the Justice Department Inspector General on Thursday with questions about the DOJ watchdog investigation into FBI misconduct. And in specific, it was about a one-page report released on Wednesday that found that a now former FBI Deputy Assistant Director, quote, engaged in misconduct by disclosing information to the media that had been filed under seal in federal court, maintaining dozens of unauthorized contacts with reporters, and accepting a $225 ticket from a member of the media to attend a dinner sponsored by the media. Doug Collins says he thinks it was Peter Strzok.
I think he's correct, and let's break this down a little bit. There's a delay, and I think getting it organized because of the scope of, I think, what the Attorney General's bar is now finding. And let me say this very clearly, because I think your audience here, better than most here in Washington, understand this. There's a radio silence by the mainstream media because they just don't want to know. There's no desire, there's no curiosity to investigate the investigators because it's going to go against the Democrat Party's and the left's narrative about the FBI being above reproach, and that everything they did and said regarding President Trump and all the issues that have come up to this are essentially undermine his credibility. So I, you know, at this point, I'm in contact with a number of former and current agents, and they're all appalled that you're seeing this level of foot dragging and cleaning out their own issue. And many folks feel, and I'm one of them, that Christopher Wray has been a complete travesty to the Bureau. He has done nothing but cover up or not permit the transparency and cleaning the house as they need right now. And there's at least four agents under some sort of criminal scrutiny, all related to the Russian narrative in some way. And it's going to get, the way I'm reading the tea leaves right now, Rick, is it's going to get a lot worse. What the Horowitz report, which is the final report, supposed to be out very soon. And I think from what I'm hearing, it's going to be very damning. And it's going to show that we're not as far as everybody thought we were regarding cleaning out the FBI.
Do you think that this information will be wrapped up in time for the 2020 election, or will this be dragged out to the extent that some would like to see it after the election?
Well, I'm not a lawyer. That's a good question for Joe Geneva or Victoria Tonsing, but I will say this about the national security aspects of it. There's overwhelming evidence that Executive Order EO-12333, which we've talked about before, was violated, and we're talking about violations which probably go back years and exceed simply the Trump campaign. And to sort that all out, I think you're talking about investigations that are going to take at least a year, that if even if you start tomorrow, you would not be done by necessarily by November of 2020 because of the scope and meticulous nature of what has to be done. Plus, I'm one of those who says we need to investigate this and push it out, Rick, but we cannot afford to actually devastate or destroy the clandestine and very sophisticated law enforcement capabilities which we can use against foreign threats. So we've really got to be careful here to do one thing well and not destroy something else inadvertently. And so it's going to take some time, and it's not going to be an easy thing, and it's going to be – I just think it's going to be very bad for – those who are in government who have allowed this sort of thing to happen.
Well, we all saw Robert Mueller's press statement, I think we all have various takeaways from that. What is your takeaway?
Well, just two. First, he blew it. He had a fundamental obligation. He talked about his responsibility to the public and just, again, highlighted the fact he was completely incompetent in doing that. The fundamental foundation of his entire investigation, he expressed no curiosity about or expressed any interest in getting to the bottom of it, which was, of course, what we now know, which goes back to the previous question, the Steele dossier. How the Steele dossier became the foundational document for his, for first off, the first investigations that Peter Strzok and others were conducting under Comey, and then the very thing that he used to launch the Russian collusion. And again, not a single finding or prosecution had anything to do with Russia. Not a one. And so he had an opportunity to finally get to the bottom of that, and he didn't. And then the second point, he failed to actually list out what he could have prosecuted the president on had the president not been the president. He used this issue, this memo that says presidents cannot be prosecuted. And I would argue he apparently had a conversation with the attorney general on the 5th of March where he was pushed on this question, are there specific charges you would charge a president with? And he said no. So the second point is this is a political statement. He did what he did for purposes of trying to keep this thing spinning. I can only guess why that is, but it was not appropriate. It's something that it was very much like Comey's reading of the charges against Hillary Clinton and not doing anything. And by the way, I would argue that those men are closely related, and Mueller should never have been appointed to be the special prosecutor because of his relationship with Comey and folks. So I think it's bad. I think it's going to go down as probably one of Mueller's worst moments. Nobody got what they wanted out of it, and it made him look just completely incompetent.
I want to turn to John Bolton. He is going to be presenting evidence to the United Nations this week that it was Iran behind those terror attacks on tankers in the Persian Gulf. And we've seen John Bolton take a pretty hard line, and even the president was joking one day and, you know, said he was trying to get him into a war. I've thought all along that this sort of a good cop, bad cop relationship, where, of course, President Trump is offering to speak with Iran and, you know, playing the good cop, and John Bolton's a little tougher. He's the bad cop. But then I got to thinking about it. Instead of bad cop, is Bolton really a rogue cop?
That's a good question. I know John, and I respect his judgment on being able to identify threat issues. There's no doubt that the Iranians have been a threat, as we talked about last week in my editorial. You know, I don't want to take away anything from the Iranians because of the nature of the mullahs and the current attitude of that government. With that said, I think there's things that should be done to try to mitigate any potential risk to the economic viability of the region. The Iranians are hurting badly, and I think they're trying to hurt others badly, such as the attack on their ships, on the Saudi ships. So both things can be true. The Iranians can be acting out badly, and certain people can be pushing for war. But the key is to pick the appropriate responses to the aggression. And I think John presenting the information, the threat information to the UN next week is a good thing. I think it's necessary. At the same time, we have to have more of our allies work with us to try to mitigate this so it does not go to the level of war. Nobody needs war. Nobody wants war. And I think working with the allies, presenting it to the United Nations it's a very good step to try to get others on board and try to explain our actions.
We've seen reports out of North Korea that there is a possibility that one of the negotiating team that was at that Hanoi summit was executed and others were sentenced to hard labor. Reports covered by South Korean media, hard to get information directly out of North Korea. And I got to thinking about Kim Jong-un, this whole, you know, situation with the summit, and just wanted to ask you the question.
Yeah.
Is Kim Jong-un maybe kind of like Trump, more on the personal relationship, feels that he might get somewhere with the United States as Trump feels that he can get somewhere with North Korea, but Kim Jong-un is hindered by his hardliners that are, you know, basically doing their own thing and not allowing Kim Jong-un to move any closer to the United States?
There's a momentum, Rick, to your point. There's a momentum of society. I mean, remember, these people have been essentially at a state of war or near war with us since the early 1950s, the North Koreans. And, you know, I'd worked the North Korean issue through the 90s into the 2000s, and there is no doubt that they are deeply, deeply indoctrinated to believe that we're the enemy. And within the context of that, it's going to take some time to walk people off the ledge and try to convince them differently. I think there's a process of that now ongoing. But I'll say this about the nature of the way the political system works in North Korea. The North Koreans are brutal when it comes to failure, when it comes to the perception of failure. And if it's true that these individuals were killed, I would not be surprised, because if you fail in a large way, they will simply summarily kill you. I have to be careful about how we knew this, but there's evidence that in their North Korean embassies overseas, that people would be summarily killed and buried in the backyard of residents of their embassies, of these North Korean facilities. So they have no problem taking human life if they think there's a failure. And I don't necessarily think that Un himself is always in control. I would argue the Warmbier issue was something that I think Kim was probably not aware of and was out of hand and done before he had a chance to intercede. So I'm no fan of Un. I think he has got issues, but the entire system itself is set up to do this sort of thing. So, you know, it's very possible that these people were killed because they failed at the summit.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, as always, thank you so much for your perspectives.
Great. Thanks, Rick.
Appreciate it. You bet. 7:46, Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll talk to KT McFarland coming up, but first a check of the traffic and weather. And Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Maryland, we still have the accident activity on southbound 95, right at 212, and this is in Calverton. Only the right lane is getting by this accident, a very serious accident. Earlier, the roadway had been closed. Now, keep in mind today that in Arlington, due to the Armed Forces Cycling Classic, there will be some road closures, including north and southbound 110 between 66 and 395, and southbound Route 1 will be closed from 395 to 15th Street, all until 10:30 this morning. Follow police direction. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Weather Channel forecast.
Looks partly cloudy today, a high of 87. Afternoon thunderstorms on Sunday with a high of 85. Monday, sunny, high 71. Sunny on Tuesday with a high of 76. Some clouds Wednesday, we're up to 84. Right now in Washington, 69. We're headed to 87. 7:47 on the Saturday morning update.
Hey, it's Larry O'Connor, and you've heard me talking about the incredible weight loss and health benefits I enjoy thanks to EMP Winity Weight Loss. The program combines the nutritious foods you need with the caring, focused, one-on-one counseling of your own professional nutrition and weight loss coach. I gotta say, my coach, Chris Ann, really has my back. What EMP 180 does for me, it can do for you. And honestly, with the pools and beaches about to become part of your life, there's no better time to lose that extra weight, regain health and vigor, and look awesome in your bathing suit. EMP 180 just announced their spring into summer event. You can schedule a free consultation at one of the 5 area EMP 180 weight loss centers. And if you sign up for a minimum 6-week program, you'll get a week free. And that's not bad, since you can safely lose several pounds a week with EMP 180, even in your first week. EMP 180, healthy weight loss that really works. Visit EMP180.com to set up your first consultation or call 855-888-0180. That's 855-888-0180. Financing's available. EMP180 Weight Loss. Use it to lose it for life.
Cumulus Media would like to publicize our job opportunities to any organization that frequently distributes employment information to job seekers or refers candidates to employers. To receive information regarding job vacancies at Cumulus Media, simply ask to be put on our mailing list. Send your request to Cumulus Media, care of Human Resources Department, 4400 Jennifer Street, Northwest Washington, D.C., 20015-2113. Be sure to include your company name, a contact person, address, phone number, and email address. Cumulus Media is an equal opportunity employer.
The lowest fee in real estate is coming soon to Washington, D.C. There's no longer any reason to pay 6% to sell your home. Introducing Rex. Rex sells homes for the lowest fee in the industry. 2% total, saving thousands of dollars per transaction. With Rex, you get a full-service team backed by technology. They don't market homes the way traditional agents do. Rex uses advanced digital marketing tactics to directly target hundreds of qualified buyers to your home the moment it goes on the market. And Rex charges only 2% total, not the 6% commission your local broker expects. Get started now by calling 833-REX-HOME. That's 833-REX-HOME. Since 2015, Rex has saved homeowners millions of dollars in fees across California, Texas, New York, and Colorado. Now, it's your time, Washington, D.C., to sign on for a simplified and cost-savings approach to buying or selling a home. To get started, call now at 833-REX-HOME. That's 833-REX-HOME. Rex Real Estate Exchange, Incorporated.
where Washington's power players come to talk.
Hello, Mr. Vice President. Mike Pence is here. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you.
And listen.
I listen every morning as I drive to the office.
WMAL.
Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Dr. Ben Carson. Thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
Senator Tom Cotton.
Thanks very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Kellyanne Conway.
It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you for being here.
105.9 FM and AM 630.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's good to join you.
Washington's Mall. WMAL.
7:50 Saturday morning updates, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by K.T. McFarland, former Deputy National Security Advisor, among her many roles in public service over the years. K.T., wonderful to have you with us.
It's a pleasure.
And there's a lot going on in Europe. The president's headed to the United Kingdom. Parliamentary elections in Europe last weekend, and the way The Hill sums it up, before the parliamentary elections, there was already a good chance of a European economic crisis. After the election results, there now has to be the real chance that we could have a full-blown European economic crisis within the next year or so. Tell us what's going on in Europe, the different countries, and which direction is Europe heading in?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, the countries that belong to the European Union, and that's most of them, they voted last week for the members to the European Parliament, and instead of electing the parties in the center, the traditional people that have always led their countries, they chose people from the far left and the far right, almost every country. And it's not dissimilar to what's happening in the United States today, because we have the rise of populists and the election of Trump. And on the other hand, the Democrats have the socialists, with people like Bernie Sanders and AOC. You know, the Republican Party decided which direction it was going to go in 2016 by rejecting the traditional candidates and electing Trump. And the Democrats are having that same internal battle right now. That's exactly what's happening in all the political parties in Europe. And Britain, from our perspective, I think is the most important, because not only did they vote the party that wants to leave the European Union to represent them in the European Union, it's now the Tory party is having problems.
Wow. Now, the president is headed there, and he's already endorsing Boris Johnson. He says he has a good relationship with Boris Johnson. What would that mean in terms of the future of our relations with the UK?
Well, here's what's happening in Britain. So in the middle of all of this, let's lead the elections to the European Parliament. Each of these countries also has their own parliament, and Britain is in a parliamentary crisis on top of everything else, because the Prime Minister, Theresa May, she's a conservative called Tory Party, and she was elected to lead Britain out of the European Union. There was a binding referendum 3 years ago. The majority of the British people wanted out of the European Union, and she was supposed to negotiate the deal. She failed to negotiate the deal. And so she couldn't find a deal that either the Europeans would accept and her parliament would accept, even her own party. So she's had been forced to resign. She is effectively out this week. They're trying to figure out who the new head of the Conservative Party is, and that person will be Prime Minister by Friday or Saturday. Now, their system is different. When they have an election, they vote for a party, not a person, and so the person who's head of that party gets to be Prime Minister. But if that person fails, that person has to leave, and the same party chooses a new one. That's a little more detail than you need, but chances are the new prime minister is going to be Donald Trump's buddy, Boris Johnson. He's the most talented and charismatic politician in Britain, and he's been a strong and outspoken champion of Brexit.
So let's turn to the situation in Mexico. We have trade tariffs announced by the president. First round would be 5% tariffs, then he would hike them in 5% increments. And what I found very interesting is that he made the announcement, and within hours, the Mexican foreign minister is on the flight to Washington to meet with officials here who are most of them are on the way to Europe.
Well, Rudy Giuliani once told me that the way you understand Trump's negotiating style is he's a real estate guy. He puts out a high bid, and that's his opening bid. It's not his final bid. It's his opening bid, and he'll settle for something far lower, maybe even different. Trump doesn't want sanctions on Mexico. He wants Mexico to stop the drug cartels from helping the illegals go from Mexico's southern border all the way through Mexico into Mexico's northern border and come into the United States. So Trump wants a wall, but Congress isn't going to give him a wall. So he's going to say, all right, what's my workaround? I guess what I'll do is go right to the heart of the problem, which is Mexico. I'm going to slap that sanction on him, and then I'm going to see what they do. And it was very successful, as you pointed out. Trump is shuffling that deck. He doesn't want sanctions on Mexico. It's the opposite. He wants no sanctions. But he wants Mexico to help us fight the illegal immigrant problem, not to help it and cause bigger problems for the United States. So he's got their attention.
Well, he's not getting any support from the Congress. The only time the House of Representatives talks about the border crisis is if someone dies in our custody. That's the only time you hear there's a problem down there from the Democratic side. And it's sad because the president has to take a lot of this on his own shoulders because he's got no support from his Congress, and they're totally opposed to anything the man wants to do.
You know, I really have a lot of problems with Congress right now, especially the House of Representatives. Why did we elect these people? We elected these people to debate legislation, to pass legislation, to defeat legislation. They're supposed to be legislators. They are the legislative branch of the United States government. But they have decided they're not going to be that anymore. That's kind of too boring for them. So they want to become, especially the House of Representatives, they're going to become the Inquisition Party. They're going to, instead of legislating, they're going to investigate Trump. They're going to have an Inquisition. They're going to get rid of Trump. And so they're abrogating, I think, their responsibilities, and they're doing something that really nobody except the far extremes of their party and the people in Washington want them to do, which is to get rid of Trump. So he's got to find workarounds for them. And even something like the new trade agreement that he's actually gotten between Mexico, the United States, and Canada, Congress is dragging their feet on that. That was a winner of a deal, and yet they don't want to give Trump the win.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's like he's on multiple football fields.
Right.
He's moving the ball down the field. He's, you know, maybe at the 50-yard line, but he sees the goal line. But he's got to get to the goal line before 2020.
Yeah.
Because he's got a number of constituencies. In other words, the tariffs right now are affecting farmers, people in the steel industry. So even some of his base supporters are affected by some of his actions. But those actions could result in a touchdown for him.
You know, that's the problem. And I really am a strong Trump supporter. But the one problem I've always had with him is he needs to prioritize. You can't do everything all at once. Granted, the Republicans and Democrats and the establishment in Washington have for 20 years gotten things wrong. They've gotten the economy wrong. They've gotten foreign policy wrong. And Trump can't do it all at once. He can't make up for those 20 years in just in 24 months. He's got to start prioritizing. And he needs to start prioritizing for a couple of reasons. One, he'll get done what he really needs to get done. And second, by putting a few points on the board, by showing he can close a deal, it'll give him much more sort of oomph and gas in his tank to get the next deal done. What I think is interesting to see is he's in the middle of this crisis in Europe, in the middle of the parliamentary crisis in Great Britain. Guess who's going to plop down? Donald Trump. Now, this is not by, it's a total coincidence. Trump was planning to go to Britain with his family to have dinner with the Queen, to have dinner with the Prince of Wales, to just have a good visit. But while he's there, he is no doubt going to talk to all of these politicians. He's going to talk to his pal Boris Johnson. He's going to talk to his pal Nigel Farage, who was one of the people that led Britain leaving the European Union. And I'm hoping that what Trump can do there is on the sidelines to say to them, you know, if you leave, when you leave, how about a U.S.-UK trade deal? We can get that one done pretty quickly. Where there are no really big outstanding issues between our two countries. We don't have a trade deal now. You would be the first European country we would have a new trade deal with. Let's see what we can do. The minute you leave the European Union, whether you leave it happily, easily, or whether it's a bad divorce and you leave with no agreement of how you're going to proceed with your trade with Europe, let's us do one. And then Trump could build on that. So he will have the U.S.-Canada-Mexico deal. He'll have the Britain deal, and then together we can be a strong sort of consortium or coalition to take on the real challenge that faces all of us, which is the unfair trading agreements that all of our countries have with China.
K.T. McFarland. It's always an honor to have you with us. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. John Matthews has the latest on the Virginia Beach shootings next, and it's Garden Sense.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, WMAL Washington.
105.9 FM and AM 630. WMAL Washington. A Cumulus station. Where Washington comes to talk.